because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. Wow, J.R., are you tired? I'm tired, man.
It's a long week.
Government Accountability Board, mm-hmm. John Doe, campaign finance. Now, those are the biggies, and we'll get to them. But I want to start with this. I'm so intrigued by Governor Walker, Assembly Republicans want the additional $200 million in bonding that was part of the budget. Senate Democrats, Darling said the governor put us in this bind. We don't want any more credit card borrowing. Mm-hmm. Here's what intrigues me. The four Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee, are they going to help the... No, let's talk about them. Representative Chris Taylor, Representative Gordon Hintz, Senator Lena Taylor, and Senator John Erpenbach. Are they going to help the Republicans issue $200 million more down?
Well, a couple things. One, they seem to indicate that they're open to it. Two, whenever you empower the minority wants something. So
yeah.
That's kind of the question. So what are they going to get in exchange?
Why should they help them?
Excuse now, one of the first answers I got from Republicans was, well, get the road projects done. Because John Erpenbach, for example.
Verona Road.
That's right in his neck of the woods. He gets his Verona Road exchange. I'm not sure that's going to be enough for some of these guys. They won't even talk about the gas tax, the long-term funding, these things that the governor's not want to get into. So it looks like, right now, if you had to bet, that they'll help put it over the top. Now, that assumes all 600 Republicans will be unified for the bonding.
Yes.
Not all of them have come out publicly and said they will, but Nygren, the co-chair from that caucus, has said, yes, we are on board. That assumes all 600 Republicans will say no, which... From what talking to most of them, they say, we haven't seen it yet, or no, I'm not on board. So that's a fairly good assumption. Now, we haven't seen an objection yet to the request from the governor. Remember, it's 14-day passive review, which means Gottlieb sent the letter on Monday, I believe. You have 14 days for a member to either object or it's approved through. Without any action by finance. That's not going to happen.
That is not going to happen.
There will be an objection. Now, the question becomes, when will they meet and how will they do this? Because under state law, as I understand it, you have to call a meeting once there's an objection. There's no deadline in order to call that meeting. So this could play out for a little while. I don't know if they'll play any games with it, but something to watch, if you will, about the way the legislature works.
Well, on Tuesday, your newsletter quoted Chris Taylor saying, yes, I'm a yes. And you guys also, Hintz said it makes a lot of sense.
But I want to see the details, though.
Yeah, and that's the same thing that Erpenbach said.
Erpenbach, though, was pretty aggressive in that. We're basically paying for Scott Walker's presidential campaign right now.
Yes.
And we want a long-term discussion about this. Lena was a more, I want to see the details. Lena, I don't think, has said for sure where she's at on this.
Well,
we
also, Wistot then said, how's this? If you approve $200 million more in bonding, by the way, the budget included $500 million more in bonding, mm-hmm. so we'd now be $700 million more in bonding. And Wistot said, if you approve this, such a deal I'm going to offer you, these five major projects, I-39-90 between Madison and the Illinois border, Highway 151, the Verona Road, Highway 23 between Fond du Lac and Plymouth, Highway 10, 441 in Fox Valley, Highway 15 near New London in Outagamie County. Wistot says they'll only be delayed 1 year, not two. Woo-hoo!
Now, look at that letter. If you look at that letter closely, though, it's not just $200 million to do that. It's a $200 million plus the $150 they want in the second year.
In the second year.
So what's interesting is the governor, when he first made his pitch for $200 million, made it sound like, hey, do this money and everything will be back on track. That's not what this letter is saying. It's saying that the $200 million will go here. We need that $150 million, then that will help. Half of that money will go toward these five projects.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, Walker said at one point, we get everything back on the normal schedule. The letter says a 1 year delay, even with the full complement being released.
$200 million this year, $150 million next year.
Although there is a caveat in that letter of there may be able to find a way to keep it on the pre-budget deadlines that we had before.
Yeah.
So they're going to try to be creative, if you will.
Just to finish up on this issue, Channel 3 interviewed Congressman Reed Ribble, mm-hmm. who's active in this bill, in the transportation funding bill that's making its way through Congress. And he said there's a decent chance that it would authorize states to toll. So that's another thing to watch.
The problem, though, is that tolling is a long-term solution, not a short-term one. And what I mean by that is it could be a decade before you see a toll booth in Wisconsin because you've got to get through what lanes you're going to put it on, you got to construct the toll booth. I mean, all these things have to happen. You can't approve it. They can't approve it next week or whatever, and you can stop a toll booth on I-39 tomorrow and start pulling money. That's not going to happen. Same thing with a miles driven tax. An idea that's been floated before of going from the gas tax to that, because that captures no matter how fuel efficient your car is, you still get hit with the number of miles you drive. That technology is not there right now. We have a short-term problem that's not going to go away without either a revenue upper or a transfer from the general fund, which, oh, by the way, is not really doing that great right now. I mean, it's balanced, but there's no real room for error that you can all of a sudden transfer $500 million next session from general fund to transportation fund and bulk up road funding.
Okay, final note on this topic, though. The Democrats, when joint finance was debating the state budget, the Democrats offered to reinstate indexing the gas tax, and that didn't go anywhere. So do you expect, as a cost of supporting the additional $200 million, the Democrats are going to again try to index the gas tax?
I'm sure they'll throw it out there. I mean, let's be honest. There are Republicans in both houses who are open to the idea of raising the gas tax. They see it as a needed step to shore up the long-term future of the transportation fund. They also see almost like a user fee. You know, yes, it is a tax, but look, we have to pay for our roads. You're using them. Let's pay for it that way. Yeah. The governor is sticking to his kind of standard of, I will not support a gas tax increase or a fee increase unless there is an offsetting tax cut somewhere else. Now,
he's still there.
Go back to GPR. I talked to him Wednesday. Same thing. Go back to GPR. The transfers, the money's not really there for a transfer. If you're going to pay for a tax cut in income or property, it comes from general fund revenue. That money's not there right now, barring a huge turnaround in the economy the next year and a half, 2.5 years. Also, we're flush with cash in 2017 going, hey, we can spend as much as we want. I don't know if that's going to happen.
But, and Darling said, we are not going to issue transportation funds or bonds that are paid for with GO because that competes with Medicaid funding and school aids and everything. Okay, new subject. The John Doe bill is on the governor's desk. The vote in the Assembly was 61-31. The vote in the Senate was 18-14. The governor now said he's going to sign it as soon as possible, which is next week. That'll be kind of a sweet political payback for Governor Walker because he's been dogged by two John Does for years. He's been dogged. His supporters have been dogged. His presidential campaign was dogged. So it'll be a little a moment of political payback for Governor Walker.
Let's be honest. If you take the Doe bill and the GAB bill, they're part of their inspiration is the John Doe investigation. Now, the GAB has its own issues beyond John Doe, going back to the recalls, how they handled those back in 11 and 12. But that said, this bill was inspired by the Doe process that happened with Doe 1 and Doe 2, first Governor Walker when he was county executive and his aides, then with the coordination between his campaign and conservative groups and recalls. There's no two ways about it. They feel like, Republicans feel like, there's an abuse of power here. They have brought up several times this process, the raids on homes of supporters of Governor Walker.
Traumatizing children. Order them not to call their
parents.
Pre-dawn
raids.
Lawyers.
How this was an abuse of power, over the top, heavy-handed. And that's really what inspired this. Now, they've been trying very hard to make the argument this week of, look, if you're a crooked politician, you'll still get investigated, but using a grand jury or other investigative tools. And Dems say, look, you're closing off or pulling one tool out of the toolbox for prosecutors of the John Doe process. They go back to the caucus scandal of 2002, which we were both here for. The vast majority of people in the Capitol right now were not there in 2002 to see what happened and how that played out, but that was a John Doe investigation. The Democrats are saying, look, that happened then. It was only fixed because of this. But, you know, I don't know. The public, I don't know how much they get into these things. One public argument this week, look, this is so partisan anymore, so baked in because of, if you're a supporter of Governor Walker, you see it as an abuse of power. If you're an opponent, you see that he got off easy on a technicality by the Supreme Court. I don't know if it really drives voters. You know, it's kind of baked in a little bit in some ways.
Well, but I was very surprised when the Assembly sponsor, Dave Craig, said in, let me get the year right and the numbers, there were 190 John Does convened in 2013 and 195 in 2014. Had you any idea there were that many?
Yeah, a lot of them were used with prison guards, quite honestly. It often happens with that, if I remember correctly. So it's not, they're not high-profile politician cases. They cover a gamut of things, or have in the past.
Okay, but the bill that's on his desk, DAs could only use John Doe to probe felony violent crimes. Does could not investigate elected officials for political crimes, which includes campaign finance, bribery. What else?
Chapters 11 and 12, I believe, are all the campaign finance laws. But that, again, you could still go through the grand jury process, which we have not used in Wisconsin.
We do not use that.
So that'll be a new experience for all of us in the state. Otherwise, you also have the normal investigative powers to subpoena things and go through stuff.
So when Voss and Craig took the assembly floor to say, this bill does not say no politician can not be investigated for any crime. That's technically true, but yes. You can't use the John Doe mechanism.
And that's how they're talking past each other, which happens quite a bit in the Capitol.
Oh, yeah. You and I have noticed. Okay, new subject, campaign finance. Now, that was passed by the Assembly, sent to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
JR, this is the first major rewrite of campaign finance, as you know, since the 1970s.
Yes.
And it's so complex. I read the bill. I read the Voss Amendment. Is there anybody in the Capitol that really understands this?
Probably Robin Voss, I'm sure. he has fingers in all of it. You know, there are people who get what's going on and kind of understand it. I don't think the average person kind of grasps any of this or is really in tune to it. The key thing, though, is with this bill is I get the impression that Senate Republicans have got some qualms about it. The GEB bill and the campaign finance will both pass the assembly, but they're kind of hung up for right now. Now, I think the campaign finance bill is an easier path to getting done. There is concern about the appearance, if you will, of doubling your campaign contributions, yep. allowing unlimited corporate contributions to parties and campaign legislative campaign committees yep. a year out from your election. Not the best optic, if you will.
Right.
And you could also make the argument if you're Democrat of like, look, they're doing the John Doe bill, the GA bill, campaign finance bill, and oh, by the way, the failed effort to gut the open records law. This is a party that's out of control and out of touch and more concerned about their power than what you're earning at home.
And when the Democrats, as the Assembly Democrats said, if you and I had a dollar for every time they said Wisconsin is open for corruption, you know, we could have a very nice lunch and make a car payment. Is that a theme that's going to resonate?
That's a good question. I get the impression they have to make it connect to something else. You can't just yell corruption over and over again and have it resonate. You have to have some kind of like connection again of they're more concerned about their campaign contributions than your take-home pay. Something like that has to stick. Now, for Republicans, let's be honest. The campaign finance laws in Wisconsin are basically Swiss cheese right now. There have been so many court decisions of knocked down thing after thing after thing. The courts have said you need to rewrite these laws.
Yes.
The issue, though, is it's become partisan. Now, I don't know if you can do a nonpartisan rewrite of campaign finance laws, but this is a very touchy subject. And you have Democrats who feel like Republicans are writing rules to benefit them and tilt the playing field toward them in the next election.
But Representative John Jagler, a GOPer, stood on the floor and said, your gripe is not with us, it's
yes.
with the U.S. Supreme Court, Citizens United. And then you had federal and state court rulings that grew out of the John Does. But let's stay on this a little bit more. What do you consider the biggest change in the campaign finance?
Oh, good question.
Corporate donations?
Corporate donations is new.
Okay.
A limited amount of corporate contributions to campaign committees and parties, not to candidates.
Not directly to candidates.
And there are some people who say, look, we're going to take a hit, Republicans saying, we're going to take a hit for the corporate contributions anyway. Why not let us take them as individuals? I mean, we're going to take the hit anyway. What's the difference in the public's mind between us and the party? But that's for right now.
What about the coordination between the candidates and those running issue ads and express ads?
Now, the coordination is only allowed with the issue advocacy. The state Supreme Court allowed that in that decision this summer with John Doe, so that's not allowed. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but in a federal court case, because John Randa, remember the Ralph Randa?
Yeah.
Ralph Randa. The federal judge at one time ruled the coordination was okay. The Seventh Circuit overturned that decision on various grounds and said we really haven't had settled law, if you will, in that. But the state Supreme Court, and again, you need a roadmap, if you will, of these decisions.
Right.
State Supreme Court saying that is allowed. So this kind of encapsulates that decision from the summer.
Well, you mentioned earlier they're doubling the amount that you can legally give to candidates. So the total now, I'm reading from the chart, to candidates for governor, individuals can give $20,000. Candidate committees can give $20,000. PACs can give $86,000. All six constitutional offices and Supreme Court candidates can now get individual donations of $20,000, which sounds like it's a double from current law.
Yes.
But when you see how much some of these third-party firms have been giving to third-party firms to help the governor, to help some of our Supreme Court candidates,
what's interesting is that those loans also will be indexed going forward and automatically increase every five years
for CPI.
And I think somebody have a comment on the floor this week that you won't index the gas tax, but you'll index your own campaign contributions.
Oh, I missed that.
But the big picture, pull back a little bit, this whole bill is about strengthening the parties and legislative committees and trying to pull control back from
yes.
those outside groups. Now, those outside groups are going to be an attractive place to park your dollars because they are anonymous.
Yep.
You don't have to report who you got money from. There are
Unlimited.
No limits at all.
Yep.
So it's still not going to like take it away, but in I think the minds of the backers of we've lost control of the message. We want to take it back at least a little bit, or put us on level playing field with those guys as much as we can, and be more of a factor in a race as not being subject to the whims of the Greater Wisconsin Committee on one side and WMC on the other.
Yeah. What's interesting is that we cannot anticipate which of these major changes is going to play the biggest role 1 year from now, when we're looking at November. It's also very interesting. The Voss Amendment said you do not have to disclose your employer, your occupation. Mm-hmm. That's
so
intriguing.
Now we can know how many journalists gave or how many lawmakers. You don't know who they work for.
But you're self-declaring your occupation.
Yes. And what's going to be harder is, let's be honest, I mean, that's something that I've gone through and figured, okay, well, who's giving money? Lawyers? You know, the trial lawyers, the realtors, you can kind of figure that out. It's an easy way to track, like, well, who are your supporters? Yeah. It gives you an idea, if you're a reporter, who's backing this guy. But, you know, that's going to go away. They've been complaining about that because, go back to, again, inspired by the recalls, they were unhappy Republicans that they saw so many of their supporters or companies that were hit by, targeted by opponents of Scott Walker because their employees gave money to Walker or Senator X. And it became a protest, if you will, of consumers saying, well, you do business with them, I'm not going to do business with you.
Right.
They don't think that's fair.
Well, okay, a final note on this. What about Democrats recusing? Every one of the Democrats stood up and said, under Section 1946 of state law, public officials cannot take action on a matter in which that official has a, quote, substantial financial interest. Was that a PR stunt or a pretty effective protest, my friend?
We won't know for a while. It's hard to know if anybody at home was paying attention. Obviously, Speaker Voss thought it was a stunt and chided Democrats, saying he is rarely, I think, so disappointed in the minority. I don't know how it's going to play out with people back home for a while.
And you saw the Steinicke and Voss press releases. Mm-hmm. This bill passed unanimously.
Yes.
With 61.
So there's a legitimate question to ask, well, how can we vote for it in committee then if it was a problem? You know, it's a little bit touchy. I don't know how it's going to play out for a while. We'll see.
Well, and I'm reminded, Senate Democrats left the mm-hmm. state, and now you have Assembly Democrats not voting on a major, major bill.
I think, you know, the bases may get more riled up by that than the middle. The middle probably thinks, well, same old for Madison. You know, it's no different than what I've seen the last 5 years.
Okay. Let's talk about the bill that would abolish the Government Accountability Board. The era of 7 retired judges ruling, regulating mm-hmm. campaign finance, elections, and ethics seems to be over, drawing to a close?
Well, good question, because now we have the Assembly's on board, but the Senate Republicans are having some qualms about it, and that's because of the retired judges piece. Now, it seems like they all feel like this process last few years has been stacked against them, Republicans I'm talking about. The original bill that Dean Knutson put forward had retired judges still having a role on the Elections Commission. Remember, it would be 2 commissions, Elections and Ethics.
Yes. 6 members on each.
So the Elections Commission gets the clerks, the Ethics Commission would get the retired judges. Leah Vukmir, the Senate co-author, said, no way. We want no, you can, if you want to appoint leaders, if you want to appoint retired judges, your business. But we would not want to reserve a role for them because we're not happy with how this thing played out. She said no. That came out in the bill they introduced.
Yeah.
Now her colleagues are saying, well, we're not comfortable with going at, we want to have a role for judges in the Ethics Commission. What could we do? How you get out of that one, I'm not quite sure yet. And here's the other dynamic to think about. It is November, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
They're done that first week of November. They come back in January, February. They want to go home as soon as they can this year. They're ready to go back to the campaign trail, get out of here at the end of February. They don't want to be dealing with this bill the last week of February on the floor of the Assembly and the Senate.
No, they
want
to
knock it out now.
Yep.
But how do you get it done quickly?
Yep.
That window is closing, because the last thing you want to have people thinking about when they go, their last impression of Madison for the year is, well, they're wrangling about the regulators and how much they could take in corporate contributions before they left, and that's my last memory before I go to the polls in November. They don't want that to happen. So
also,
get it done.
And they have to get it done now if they're going to do it, because we are looking at 4 statewide elections.
Oh, the window is closing too. That, remember, the current GAB would oversee the spring election and the circulation nomination papers for the fall election. It would come to a close June 30th, right?
Yes.
Then the new
elections and ethics panels would commissions.
The new commissions would kind of get running during that period and take effect July 1 and then take over for the fall election.
Right.
The less time you have for those new commissions to get up and running, the more compressed it is and more of a rush, if you will. When you're rushing, mistakes happen. So they want to get this done so they have some time and it's not a crazy dash before they take effect.
Senate Republicans, are they worried that you have a elections and ethics panel, 6 members, 3-3, nothing gets done, that you see a repeat of the Federal Election Commission, which even the chairman says is paralyzed.
I'm sure that's part of it, but they're also looking at it and going, okay, wait a second. We've done these bills that aren't going to look good back home, like one after another. Like at some point, you got to realize, outstate Republicans, we're not in the Milwaukee market. We're not in Ozaukee County with a 70% Republican district. We have more of a where the middle has to hold, if you will. Mm-hmm. And some of these things aren't sitting well with our, or we're kind of worried how it's going to play back home. At the same time, the base, Republican base, wants these bills. They want to have the GAB taken apart and dismantled. They want to have campaign finance laws clarified. You know, so it's a little bit of tension there right now, if you will.
Okay. Civil service changes are coming. But this dispute over ban the box, the issue here is if you're applying for a job, should you be asked, do you have any criminal convictions and in some cases arrests? This is this banning the box idea.
Yes.
And Steinicke, the sponsor in the assembly, says, I think people should have a chance to, if you've made a mistake, still qualify for a job. I want the box banned. But Steve Nossen, a Republican in the Senate, is digging in his heels. So you have this impasse on the issue. Is this going to profoundly delay the civil service changes?
That's an excellent question, because it becomes, is this a provision worth dying on the hill for, if you will? Steinicke has said...
Go ahead.
Steinicke has said that he wants the bill to go through as is without with that provision, because what it says is, current law, you don't have to ask that question. So if you're the administration, you have the option of not asking the question on the... Or even with this provision, I understand it correctly, if you, for example, want to be a bank inspector and you're a bank robber, you could ask him about that. You know, like that could still be asked in the process. The question is, will the Senate say we have to have this provision taken out or we will not vote on this bill? Remember, Roger Roth, by the way, one of the co-authors, is on active duty right now, I believe, so he's also out of pocket. Will they wait for him to come back to do it in the Senate? They have time to work it out. The assembly's going to take it up, I believe, next week and vote on the floor on that. So it comes again, who's going to blink or who's going to say we have to have this for it to get done? It will get done this session, I believe, when I'm talking to people, but I just don't know how passionate they're going to be on that one provision to hold it up.
But Senator Nass has been a key player in some of these deals, on right to work. Mm-hmm. So don't you think the odds favor his position here, that we keep that we don't ban the box?
It's a good question of where are all 19 members of the caucus at right now? Are they all on board with Steve? Now, we got through committee. So there's 2 members who are open to a suggestion, but they get it through the entire thing. It's, again, remember, Senate Republicans, that dynamic of sometimes you have to let them massage things a little bit and kind of let people sift and winnow before they come to a conclusion. So that may be those processes again for them.
And a final note on this issue, the National Employment Law Project estimates 1 in 4 Americans have arrest or conviction on their record, although most of them are for nonviolent offenses. So it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It is a big deal. Okay, time for WisPolitics Rising.
Paul Ryan.
Speaker Ryan.
Almost. I mean, here's a guy from Janesville in line to be one of the most powerful people in the free world.
45 years old, first elected in 1998. Go ahead, excuse me.
So what really though, was brilliant about what Ryan did this week was he basically outfoxed the rest of the caucus, this Freedom Caucus you have. So you pull back a little bit. John Boehner was constantly under pressure from the conservative wing of his caucus that he wasn't conservative enough, wasn't doing enough to get their priorities on the floor of the House. And they filed a motion to vacate the chair, which helped propel this whole thing to happen.
Yes.
Now, Ryan's going, okay, so now he fell apart. McCarthy was going to be the next guy, and all of a sudden he couldn't get it done. So Ryan now is the person they have to have. Well, Ryan's looked back and said, okay, I need to have a unified caucus to make this work. How do you get there when you have this Freedom Caucus demanding these certain things, like, we have to have this? So what Ryan said was really pretty smart. I will do it if I'm a unifying force, and that means I have to have A, B, C, D, and E before I do this, including family time, which was an interesting inclusion on the
list. I'm not going to travel so much because I have a young family.
I want changes to vacate the chair. I want all the other things done. And I need to have support of all 3 of these major caucuses in our conference. What he basically would say, okay, Freedom Caucus, if you don't agree to this, you're going to be the ones who blew this entire caucus because nobody else can do the job. There was no consensus candidate. Nobody could lead the caucus going forward. It becomes your fault. You marginalize yourselves if you blow this up. In the end, they didn't hit the 80% mark you need for a formal endorsement.
They
got
70%
a supermajority.
Yes, they did.
So he gets their support and basically he's kind of almost neutered them, saying, okay, if you guys agreed to this, if you cause havoc on the floor, look, you look unreasonable. So very brilliant move by him to do this. Now the question long term is, what's it do for his presidential hopes? We all kind of assume that Paul Ryan has a lot of time before he's done politically.
Yeah.
The thought was back last fall was he wasn't running for president. He'd be Ways and Means Chair for maybe three terms. I think the limit is 6 years. Do it for three terms, leave Congress, and go do something in the private sector for a while and still have a decade, 15 years before he has to run for president before his window closes. There have not been many speakers who become president, by the way, in our country.
As in none?
So will this help or hurt his stature going forward if he wants to run for president something along? We'll see. That's kind of one hang up for Ryan to figure out is what's this do for me if I want him for president someday.
So what he did was really smart. I don't want the job. I'm perfectly happy as Ways and Means Chair.
And it was
you're gonna draft me? Okay. Yeah. I'll be drafted on my terms.
Yeah. And it was really I don't need this. You know, I don't need this kind of job. So
right.
Here's my terms if you're gonna read to him. Then you are stuck with me in some ways.
So right.
Smart move by him.
He would be the first U.S. House Speaker from the great state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Would he bring pork barrel projects? Would we suddenly be getting more federal aid or federal contracts?
Maybe 20 years ago, but those days have kind of passed in Congress. I mean, the day of the earmarks have kind of like waned, if you will. Now, it's not to say they've gone away, but that's been a much harder sell, if you will, in the environment you have in D.C. right now, especially Republicans.
I completely agree. Paul Ryan rising. Mixed.
The swing seat Republicans, it's...
Three of them voted against GAB.
Vote this week is Tranel, Novak.
Travis Tranel.
And Petrick.
Yes.
It's kind of a reminder of this dynamic you have in the Assembly where you have 63 Republicans right now. You have a big majority.
Yeah.
So you're on the budget. You lost, 11 of them, I think it was, something like that. You lose three on this bill. What's happening is you have an agenda in this Assembly right now that is fairly conservative. But you have some members who represent swing seats. They're kind of going, this is not the best thing back home. What do I do? Oh, by the way, the groups that play in races that help vulnerable members, they have an agenda as well. They have their checklist. When you drop off big bills, they kind of go, that's a check mark against you. Am I going to go help you next fall if you're not helping me? So you're kind of like walking this tightrope, if you will. Now, when you talk to Republicans, they'll say, look, these guys should cut some slack. They should let off some bills. And there should be some kind of leeway of, okay, we understand what's going on back home. But if you're a group that has a very pointed interest in the Capitol and you run ads because you have support from these guys on that issue and they say no on your issue, what do you do? Now, never mind that next fall should be a bad environment for Republicans. Now, again, should be. You know, normal presidential year in Wisconsin should be good for Democrats. We'll see what happens. Hillary Clinton has been rebounding, it seems like, the last couple weeks. Good performance yesterday, good in the first debate for Democrats. But if the floor drops out for her...
And Biden withdraws. Yes.
Yeah. Florida, maybe that changes, but we've been in a blue state presidential elections. There are several seats that Republicans have that are very blue that they managed to win despite that. They should lose a couple anyway, so it doesn't help these guys.
You're talking about at-risk GOPers. Do you add Senator Gudeck to that list, Senator Tiffany, and Representative Heaton out of Wausau?
Oh, there are probably, if you ask Republicans and leadership in the Assembly, there are like a half dozen seats they worry about next fall. You add up prevailing wage, right to work, these bills, it just kind of all gets to like, I don't know what's going to be like next one. Now, again, the problem is you have to, A, if you're Democrats, make a credible argument and have it sleep in, and B, if you're Republican and a vulnerable, if you can work your district hard enough and kind of inoculate yourself from these, Madison politics, if you will, you can survive. We've seen that before. Howard Markland's a great example. That guy won a deep blue seat in the Assembly and held on to it despite being in a very deep blue seat and taking conservative votes. I mean, there is an example.
And he ends
right
up
there
on finance, and he has an imprint
in the Senate
on the state budget. He really does.
So Democrats also have to recruit well. You can't beat somebody with nobody. So they got to recruit well. There's a lot of unknowns out there, if you will. And in the Senate, Gudeck is the most obvious target because he won by 600
votes.
All right, in the presidential year. So he's the only target. Now, maybe they go after Tiffany. Maybe they find somebody else. But really, of the true targets, Republicans is just really about Gudeck right now. So
okay.
And he's had his issues with prevailing wage and right to work because big hard hat district that he's got, a lot of contractors. So there are lots of issues these guys are kind of not so great for him.
And Tiffany voted on the joint finance open
Shorelands, open records.
Secrecy, so Shorelands.
There might be some stuff there to poke at him with, if you will.
Okay, falling?
So the John Doe, now we've already kind of talked about that process a little bit, but pull back and look at these arguments of the Doe, campaign finance,
GAB.
Can you make a credible argument for a Democrat of these guys are arrogant, out of touch, they're more concerned about their protecting their interests in Madison than they are about yours back home? Can they do that? That's the real question going forward. Now, the Doe, we all know what's going to happen with that process now. No more political investigations.
Right.
It's been kind of limited, if you will. But can they use that as a jumping point in having a credible argument next fall. Look, Democrats, they've been outgunned financially last couple elections. The union money has gone away. They have to have good candidates. They have to work hard and have a good message. Can they find those things?
Message, vision, candidates.
And not just rely on Hillary Clinton, you know, or Bernie Sanders, something surprising happens, pulling them across the finish line on top of the table. They can't rely on that.
They have to go beyond open for corruption.
And they have to, take that message, connect it to something else. And, oh, by the way, how do they talk to people in western Wisconsin, southwestern Wisconsin? They're losing those voters there. They have to reconnect with them, especially in the assembly races. They're going to win.
Didn't I read on your newsletter there's a group now that's doing some running some radio ads with the Democratic message?
Yeah, I think they're, I can't remember which one it is. All of a sudden, I'm blanking
okay.
on it.
But so they're playing a little bit of offense.
Yes, we will see. But again, it's a long ways between now and next November to see what the environment's going to be.
There's
like.
An eternity.
Yes.
An eternity. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And for we journalists, J.R., the hits just keep on coming.
Yes.